This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Media and hopefully arrested and convicted for their crimes.
Well, Christopher Doyon, a.k.a. Commander X, I want to thank you for being with us, activists with the activist group Anonymous. Also, thank you to Monica Johnson-Hostler with the National Alliance to End Sexual Violence, as well as to Kristen Gwynn.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is more talk radio with hosts Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey. Today's guest is Nicholas Caleb, author of the recent article on Blue Oregon entitled "Kneel Before the Job Creators or Stand for Something Better."
KBOO Community Radio Night for the 2013 Blazers season will be April 17th, the last home game of the regular season. Tickets are limited for this unique opportunity, where a portion of the proceeds will help support your community radio station. More information can be found at kboo.fm/Blazers.
Good morning. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. I'm here with my co-host, Celeste Carey. Today is Monday, January 7th, and it is approximately 8:03 a.m. This is More Talk Radio, and we're glad that you are joining us this morning. We welcome your calls here to be a part of our morning conversation. This morning, we will speak with Nicholas Caleb, who recently wrote an article in Blue Oregon intriguingly entitled "Kneel Before the Job Creators or Stand for Something Better." In this article, he speaks about his concerns over a recent bill that the state legislature approved, House Bill 420, 4200. The governor, Kitz Hopper, called a special session in December. The House bill passed 50-5 in the House, 22-6 in the Senate. And according to the site, the summary is it authorizes the governor, in consultation with Director of Oregon Business Development Department and Director of Department of Revenue, to enter into qualifying investment contracts with taxpayers that promise to make certain investments. It sounds, you know, vague enough, but this Nike bill certainly cause a concern for many people. And Nick was able to put down his thoughts and raise some very important questions about this bill, about the process, about what we view as should be economic development, and how we should challenge the overwhelming tide that we see not only in our state but also in this country. So it is really great to have you here with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So maybe we can begin by you just if tell us a little summary of about this bill. Where did it come from? You know, I woke up one morning and opened up the paper, and the governor's calling a special session. So I didn't know whether the earth was about to quake or something like that, and say that Nike wanted a special deal. How did this bill develop?
So there's a public way that the bill developed and a private way that the bill developed. In public, about a week before the legislative session was announced, Kitzhaber announced that there would be an emergency session on something, and people were speculating on what that would be, and some people thought it might be, hey, maybe the state will finally issue a moratorium on foreclosures, for example. That seemed like an emergency to some people. What it ended up being, obviously, is that Nike had said that they wanted to do some kind of development and needed a tax fix in order to do that. But the negotiation for that started months before. It started even in July, it looks like. Mm-hmm. And apparently this is pretty common. I don't think that makes it right, but it's common that our state agencies will enter into these negotiations with corporations about investments in secret, and they'll sign non-disclosure agreements. So our public bodies enter into secret negotiations with private companies. And in this case, apparently in October, Kitzhaber finally came into the fold, at least according to the documents that we have, and became aware of what was going on, called a special session, and then we got wind of it about a week before the session happened. So that's the background that I know.
So a question about that process. I noticed you said that Kitzhaber came into the fold. So was he not part of the initial negotiation? And then why would the corporation, or was it the corporation that caused the convening of a special session? Because I'm thinking, okay, is there a little bit of expense tied to that? Are they not looking out for our best interest? Oh, did I really say that? And stuff like that. I'm just curious as to why it happened with this kind of timing.
Well, it's hard to say for sure. On its face, feel like you do. There's not much of a paper trail from what we know and the research that I've seen done. That's the timeline that I lined out is sort of the official timeline. But mm-hmm. for me, all the stuff is happening behind closed doors. And that's why I wrote this huge article about public process being violated, because to me, it smells awful, and they didn't take any pains to sort of get rid of those concerns at all. They said, we're going to do this. People said, the process is bad. And they said, deal with it, mm-hmm. and the legislature did very pliantly, as I put it in the article.
So why don't you summarize your article, the points that you make about it, and why we all should be concerned about this, not only the process, but you raised several important points in this article.
Sure. So I came at it from a variety of perspectives. It's long, and there are a lot of themes involved in it. But I wanted to stay away from sort of the very narrow tax questions, although they're really important. People like Chuck Shekidoff, who writes at Blue Oregon as well, did a lot of work up before the special session in a very short amount of time, talking about the way that the tax structure had changed over the last only 6 years or so. In 2006, they moved to what's called this single sales factor tax calculation, which, although tax records are amazingly also secret in Oregon about how much corporations pay, people think that Nike's tax rate got cut by about 90% in 2006, which is huge.
That is huge.
Yeah, and so people have been talking about the single sales factor for a while, and then talking about the tax implications of this. I tried to skip over that as much as possible mm-hmm. and talk more about themes like democracy and process, which, this is a largely democratically controlled state, right? And what is it that Democrats and liberals talk about all the time? It's process. Process mm-hmm. is basically what the entire philosophy is built on, due process. And here, you know, because a single company demanded that process be axed so that they could get what they wanted right away, we did it. And you didn't hear, you saw a few people like Jules Bailey, who's my representative, you saw him talk a little bit about, well, the process is not ideal. And what I try to do is go, no, it's not ideal. Like, you're addressing this in a very soft manner. It was non-existent. Mm-hmm. You know, people, one of the reasons why the article got so much attention is that people tried to organize against it in a very short amount of time, and they just didn't have the time to do it. And I went to the legislature with 1,200 articles and signatures in hand that the Working Families Party had gathered in a single day. Mm-hmm. You know, people were really angry about this. So I tried to take that anger and put it into a larger international context, where this type of getting around public process or greasing the wheels of commerce is really common. So I wrote a lot about special economic zones and India and Southeast Asia, where not only do corporations, transnational corporations, get special treatment, but they get special geographical zones created for them where they don't have any taxes, and their laborers, they don't have labor laws, they don't have to pay export duties. And this was kind of, for me, looking at it from a broader context, a beginning down that road. We've seen a lot at the national level in other states. Some states don't even have labor protections in the country anymore. Mm-hmm. And Oregon sort of prides itself on being this progressive state. And yet, when that same pressure was put, it caved immediately. There was no five people in the House, you know, voted against it. And that was with the pressure. You know, those people without any kind of pressure might have voted for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're speaking this morning with Nicholas Caleb, who's a professor at Concordia University, who is the author of a recent article in Blue Oregon entitled Kneel Before the Job Creators or Stand for Something Better. In this article, he addresses the special Nike deal that the Oregon legislature passed last month, and more widely speaks about the government processes and the nature of our democracy. We invite your calls and participation in our program this morning. You may call us at 503-231-8187 and join us with a question or comment. You might be concerned about the Nike deal. What does it say about the nature of our democracy and the processes here in Oregon and its relation to what we see going on the national scene?
Given the fact that on the face of it, this bill was about jobs for Oregon, given the fact that we have approached and, in my opinion, fallen off the fiscal cliff, there are those who would say, well, look, it's not so bad after all because we have these jobs. Two things about the jobs. One thing that wasn't said was what kinds of long-term jobs we're going to be looking at out of this deal. Now, I know some people have said, okay, there's been a possibility of massive construction jobs, which generally, and I say generally, pay a living wage, but they're not long-term jobs. What kind of benefits do you think we might see out of this? What have they at least offered in terms of jobs, and given the fact that with taxes rising and the corporation paying less tax here in Oregon, we're going to feel the squeeze. Whatever little gains we've made against unemployment is not really going to be that much given this deal that's been made.
Yeah, it's hard to say because Nike hasn't released very many deals, and they didn't beforehand about what kind of development that they're actually going to pursue. And I was reading through the contract. I still need to spend more time on reading through it. I try to use as much of my break as possible on break. But coming back, looking through the contract, it's not clear from the language of the actual contract that Kitzhaber and Nike signed what kind of development there will be. It could be in the bill, there's a lot of talk about rural Oregonians and, like you said, a lot of rhetoric around job creation. I don't know if that's just there for filler or if they actually intend to do something in that way. But it could be that I also heard people talking about just making more corporate offices in Portland, right? Mm-hmm. So at the same time, Nike was asking for tax breaks in Oregon, they've been doing sort of similar lobbying in Portland and in Washington County further. So it's really hard to say. But, you know, in the article I talked about the broader economics of what's going on as well, where we see really no, we have our plans locally, like our Portland Development Commission, you know, of course, always looking out for our best economic interests, basically is set this area as an export area. They're mm-hmm. like, well, what can we do here? So mm-hmm. we'll just export things. So now we have coal being proposed coming through our state. We're privatizing water. You know, we're doing short-term bridge projects that are going to increase environmental problems that we should be moving away from. So there's this place in Portland is sort of ripe for maybe like Green New Deal projects, which would actually move us to something that's more independent. But we keep seeing these short-term developments that feel more like plunder than they do long-term economic development, to me at least.
And in your article, to just expand about that a little bit, you speak about, you know, the opportunities that we certainly could have in terms of addressing issues such as climate change, but somehow right. we refuse to do that. And I sense that's because of, why is that we choose not to, you know, call a special session to talk about climate change and things that we can do as opposed to giving large corporations special deals?
Yeah, I think it's probably a story that's told over and over and over. It's maybe even cliche right now. There's just a lack of power. Money buys influence. Oregon prides itself on having a relatively clean democracy and, you know, by the standards of European democracy or something like that, it's not clean. If you don't have the ability to buy a bunch of lobbyists, if you can't shower people with campaign cash, then you can't really get influence. So I tried to draw these contrasts between, you know, the Nike deal. Only apparently Nike wanted that, and maybe some people in the state who were like, why shouldn't we give Nike what they want because they're a big company, you know? Whereas these anti-coal forums are drawing hundreds and hundreds of people. You hear even the administrators are just like, we've never seen this much interest in any kind of public forum before. Big demonstrations outside all around the state and at the federal level as well. And sort of that process just kind of like ekes along, and you don't see any real move from the state to actually do anything about it. So those are the questions that I ask myself, and I think the unavoidable conclusion is it's about money and it's about ideas and actually having the courage to sort of take a step in a different direction.
And again, this is a state with a Democrat governor and Democrat majority in the House and Senate.
So yeah, and one of the strongest environmental, you know, centers in the country as well.
Mm-hmm. And one of the strongest referendum processes too. So hearing that, it makes me feel really, I've got a dismal outlook when it comes to not only, as you said, clean government, but informing the population, informing the people so they know what's going on. But more importantly, our democratic process is pretty much been thrown out the window.
Yeah, that's what I saw. I think from this deal specifically, that's what outraged me the most. That's why I wrote with anger, is that you would think that maybe somehow people could have at least, you know, slowed this process down or moved it into the next session, even if it wasn't prevented, to have some semblance of public process. And I don't even understand really why economically Nike had to make the move. It seems just like a power grab, just to say, like, if we ask for it, you'll give it to us. And even the relationship that they ask for is so bizarre. Like, the state must enter into contracts as if Nike and the state are on equal footing, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas we should remember that Nike is incorporated under the laws of the state. You know, they have to apply for their corporate charter through the Secretary of State.
They're not a sovereign entity.
That's right. But they think they are. And mm-hmm. that's sort of the push of where corporate governance is going. Like, and it's being allowed to happen at the state level. In a lot of places, it's already sort of fully happened. Back east, I've been watching a lot of Chris Hedges because he's talking about his new book that he's wrote, and his description of sort of the way that government works in Appalachia with coal owning everything is a lot like how I feel Nike has a grip on our state process.
Well, we have a couple of callers who want to join this conversation. Let's go to Sean. Good morning, and thank you for waiting, Sean.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. It feels like we're in a really schizophrenic place here, because on the one hand, you have Democratic Party leaders encouraging young people, poor people, to get involved, you know, the whole narrative of, hey, you know, we've got to put pressure on this president to do the right thing, you know, and he'll do the right thing if we just put enough pressure on the Democratic Party. And then on the other hand, we have the Democratic Party continuously, both at the state and national level, stabbing us in the back repeatedly, whether we're talking about free trade agreements, the environment, foreign policy, economic policy. It feels really crazy. We browbeat people, like a lot of KBOO listeners are, you know, we hear this over and over again. Get involved, blah, blah, blah. But then the people who are supposed to be, you know, somewhat on our side are continuously stabbing us in the back. So this whole notion of, like, centrism, you know, we hear about extremism on the right and on the left. Well, it seems like we've got centrist extremism. I mean, if you look at where the center is today, it's mm-hmm. a very corporate fascist place. You know, special deals for mega corporations. So I just want to put that out there and see if your guests had any thoughts. Thanks.
Thank you for your call.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I invoked the shock doctrine is this is the way that mm-hmm. you get to that space when you can't get to it otherwise, right? So Nike didn't say, like, they come to the door and politely write an editorial and ask the state to enact an emergency session. They just declared an emergency and said, oh my gosh. And some of the legislators were even talking about Nike leaving the state entirely, which doesn't appear to have been.
It wasn't on the table.
Yeah, but they wanted to create that impression to give mm-hmm. themselves cover for why they were doing it. Or, oh, well, how do we know later on down the road they won't change their mind and leave us? I was like, well, that's not the job of the state to sort of caress Nike. It's an important part of the economics of the state, but, like, the relationship is important, and having people being able to actually control their government seems important to me. Like, that's what I get when I think about representative democracy, and we just keep moving farther and farther away. I think the caller is absolutely right with what he says.
And we'll go to our next caller.
Good morning. Good morning, Brian.
Yeah, good morning. Listen, I don't know if I can, with this comment, will just reiterate what you guys have been saying, but, you know, I moved to Oregon about 4.5 years ago now, and, you know, I moved up here basically because I saw a lot of craziness down in the Southwest. And, you know, the bottom line is I don't think Phil Knight and Nike represent Oregon. It's not the Oregon that I move to, you know, and I don't know why we're even encouraging him to stay in the state. You know, he operates in third world countries and keeps people at slave wages and, you know, dangerous conditions, and we can go on about that for a long time. But why we would reward the man with tax breaks, and I want to point out something else. If he's operating like this in other countries, and he's suppressing people, it's wage oppression. What makes you think he's just going to come home and treat us fairly?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
And you know, that's my big point there. You know, so I think, and I'll throw out this as a little, you know, in the vein of Abby Hoffman, I think we should encourage Phil Knight to move right down to Texas, maybe build him a nice big plant down there, and be rid of him. Have a nice day.
Thoughts on his remarks?
What can I say? I mean, I generally agree with what he had to say. It's a sad state of affairs. Nike is a corporation that is built upon image, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wear Nike every once in a while. I went to the University of Oregon. Like, I understand the culture around the football team and everything like that, mm-hmm. but it's excessive. It really is. And if Nike were really, they've got this rhetoric right now where they're moving towards sort of like green something, you know, like every corporation has adopted this. We're greening,
green,
you know,
something.
Right.
Yes.
And so people keep waiting in the same way that they do with the rest of capitalism for it to green itself and to do the right thing. And of course we live in such an enlightened age that these people, as intelligent as they are going to just, you know, do it on their own. But that's not how the profit motive works. You know, if the reason why I think Nike is coming back and demanding these conditions is because people in China aren't buying their stuff anymore. And people in China's actually living conditions are getting slightly better than they were. And people are having a little bit more bargaining power. So with the international labor market as it is, so depressed, the United States doesn't really make anything anymore. We're a credit-based economy. And we have this fiscal, quote-unquote, emergency. So everybody's going to come here while they can, take advantage of that emergency, and levy any conditions that they possibly can on us in the process. That's what I see as sort of our future, unless we stop it from happening.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland, 90.7 in the metro area, 91.9 in the Willamette River Valley, and 100.7 in Willamette River Valley, 91.9 in the Columbia Gorge. There we go. We're speaking here today with Nicholas Caleb, who's written the article, Kneel Before the Job Creators or Stand for Something Better in Blue Oregon. Join the conversation at 503-231-8187, and we'll go to our next caller. Thank you for holding. Good morning, Chris.
I have a question about who it was in the legislature that actually knew that this was happening, because my understanding was that not everybody in the legislature knew that this process was going on until that emergency session was called. Is that correct?
We don't know. I assume from the way that some of them knew, for sure. The leadership probably knew, because they were confident by the time that they announced the special legislation emergency session that they had enough votes for it to pass. So they didn't announce it until it was ready. So that means to me, you know, sort of implicitly that people knew. Didn't know is less clear.
Right. Yeah, because and the next day, I believe it was a Saturday, I got an email from my legislator, Tobias Reed, with a full explanation of why he felt it was necessary, and I just can't help but wonder if he was, and you know, being that he represents the Washington County district that I believe includes Nike, it would be very likely that he was a part of that whole discussion and any building of this particular legislation. But yeah, I'm just really appalled at this whole thing, and I just don't know what it is that we can do as citizens. So if maybe you could speak to that a little bit, what next steps might be, how we can curtail this process and hopefully reverse it, that would be great. But thanks for the great discussion this morning.
And you addressed those, what we can do in this article. Why don't you share something with you?
This is always like the eternal question about organizing, and people have pointed out the frustration with the Democratic Party in general. So if you talk to some people, they'll say, like, you know, take over the Democratic Party. That's one way to do it. I used to be a Democrat. I still have lots of friends within the party, and I still, you know, talk to people. I write for occasionally this Blue Oregon, which is largely a Democratic Party site, right? It's an audience that I want to address and sort of get people to flip a little bit. But I think in general, there are a lot of things that people can do on the official political level and also sort of like the unofficial level of organizing. So one thing is, don't give your money to parties that don't represent you. Give them to parties that will. That's the basic thing that you can do. With regard to this specific issue, you saw that government is still important, right? They even take the time to sort of propagandize us means that there's still a lever that has some influence. So with Tobias Reed being turned into basically a lobbyist for Nike instead of your legislator, you can see that they recognize that to make this emergency work, they had to get everybody in line, right? So the more and more that we are outraged about this and actually sort of go sit outside of our legislators' offices and make it known that, you know, they're not going to get elected again, that helps. I think there's a chance that we might go down to the legislature at the beginning of the session and do some demonstrations, not just on the Nike deal, but use the Nike deal as this broader opening of, like, we get it now. Like, our eyes are open. We know that this is a shadow. We know that as soon as anyone big enough demands that we give up more of our democracy, that the state will roll over and give it to them, and enough is enough. So there's already a healthcare rally that's going to be held on the 4th February 4th, I think, with people demanding universal healthcare, and there's going to be a bill introduced. And I think what we're going to try to do is get a lot of interest groups that are affected by so-called austerity to head down there at the same time and do some demonstrations, just as a demonstration that there's a lot of opposition to where things are going. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the question to what do we do is you organize with people that are like-minded. you push messages, you build from the bottom up. There's a lot of organizations that are starting around this time or started the last year that are starting to gain a lot of momentum, and jumping in and keeping those going, I think, is what you have to do.
We've got more callers in the buffer. We'll go to our next caller. Good morning.
Randy.
Randy?
Yes, I'm a conservative who likes to listen to KBOO, usually to disagree, although this time I must say, as a conservative, I want to call in and say that on giving favor, government offering special deals to special favored companies is anathema to conservatism. So we agree on this. And just by the same token, I don't think we should be making special deals with green companies or anything else. Just have laws that apply to everybody. Everybody compete in the marketplace, and that's how I like it.
Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
See, we can find agreement.
Yeah, I mean, people, this is why everybody was, when Occupy and the Tea Party were sort of going on, when they were in their infancy, right, and everybody was sort of like, oh, will they ever work together? These are the issues that made the most sense. Like, really nobody wants corporate rule. When you break it down, people might be confused about sort of the mechanisms and what's going on, but that part of it is really unifying. Like, nobody wants there to not be a democracy anymore, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, the way I see it, though, I don't want to say it's a little disingenuous, because whereas you will hear some conservatives saying they don't want corporate rule, I will interpret corporate rule to mean they don't want regulation, they do want concessions. So for him to say, well, we don't want special concessions for this particular corporation, I find to be disingenuous. When you turn around and you look at oil companies and even now your automakers, and they've gotten lots of concessions, which are really, I'd say, helped by rule. So, yeah. You know, that's kind of like a circular, well, it's not even a circular, I don't even know what to call that, you know, it's disingenuous, well,
it's a half argument.
Yeah, that'll work.
there's a lot of writing that's been going on over the last few years, and a book, the authors, I can never remember their name, but it's The History of American Capitalism or Empire.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm. It's that the state has always been sort of this guarantor of, it guarantees private property, and it guarantees companies the ability to do business. And, you know, I actually do share a lot of sympathy with that kind of idea of having people have to come about it honestly. If we didn't subsidize dirty energy, it wouldn't be competitive at all anymore, for example.
Well, if we didn't subsidize capitalism, it wouldn't be competitive. So, I mean, to break it down to the root.
Yeah.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio. Our guest this morning is Nicholas Caleb, who is the author of a recent article in Blue Oregon, Kneel Before the Job Creators or Stand for Something Better. And we're hoping you are standing for something better. And we'll go to a couple of callers. Brian.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I really appreciate this conversation. Something you said earlier about regarding Nike and University of Oregon just kind of reminded me this blindly worshiping that kind of juggernaut, you know, sports and college sports and Nike. Reminds me of sort of like what happened to the culture at Penn State when that whole scene went down there. That people just, you know, blindly following that and just allowing it to develop a momentum of its own can oftentimes lean to no good, and that's what it seems like is happening here with Nike. It's just whatever they want, they get, and then look what happens sometimes, and they just, you know, lose their way.
Yeah, the connection between Nike and education is actually one that's people don't understand very well, and for me, actually, it's not something that I'm expert on either, but there are a lot of private education efforts going on in Oregon and in the nation right now that seek to defund public education, put so many requirements on educators that they can't possibly succeed, and then propose sort of as the alternative a private model. Nike invests a lot of money in that. They want control over the university system. They've largely got control of the university system. And so even at U of O, it's not necessarily just a place for them to showcase new uniforms. It's and they've squashed dissent. You know, people was a decade ago when students wanted to divest from campaigns of child labor, and Nike basically cracked the whip and mm-hmm. said, "We'll leave if you don't get your students in order." And they mm-hmm. said, UFO said, "Okay, we'll get them in order."
Never mind.
Yeah.
Let's go to our next caller.
Mark. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Thanks for the great discussion. You know, for decades, it was drummed into our heads, what's good for General Motors is good for yes. the United States. A couple of years ago, the head of Volvo in Sweden said that Volvo doesn't need Sweden, but Sweden needs Volvo. I think we really face a corporate totalitarianism, a soft fascism, in which lobbyists write laws and private interest is passed off as public interest. It's an incredible scandal that private losses should become public losses, and then that I wanted to mention three resources. One, a great Canadian movie, The Corporation, which focuses on the dark side of the corporation, which, of course, the corporados never mention. The second is a website, alicelaw.org, in which you can actually download the whole Vermont health law. So this is kind of a counter to ALEC. It's a public response. It's just started a month or two ago. And I think it's very, very empowering. Another resource is Move to Amend, so that corporations finally accept responsibilities as well as rights, and don't just reduce the state to an errand boy for the banks, which is how Bill Moyers described our present situation. I wonder if you might comment on that.
Thank you for your call.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, some I agree wholly with that narrative, actually. I spoke a little bit about it in the article. I think it was the line that I chose to bold was to say basically that the economic good and the public good have been seen now as interchangeable. That's not how it's always been. We had different, I mean, even as the American empire being an empire from its inception, there was still in law this idea of a commons. And it didn't really go away until it was a largely stolen commons, of course, so it's not that great. But at least in ideologically, this idea that there was a public good and that people had the final say, and basically that started to go away as soon as the Industrial Revolution went into high gear and railroads started getting sued because they would hit people's grazing cattle. Mm. And they started bribing state legislatures and being like, well, this isn't working for us anymore. Like, we need enclosures and we need strict private property regimes. And then from the 1860s sort of on, we've had more and more and more of that sort of ideology of private interest equals public interest.
Good. Another resource is an incredible book by Bartlett and Steele titled America, What Went Wrong? The Betrayal of the American Dream. They were actually on a three-hour C-SPAN book TV presentation yesterday. Mm. And they emphasized how Johnson developed the great society, and FDR insisted and created Social Security. And this is what we must constantly emphasize. Otherwise, we just become a prey to the rule of the stronger, and the market failure and elite failure. You know, neoliberal economics is really discredited with the financial crisis and with private health insurance. So we really need to focus on market failure and elite failure and the commons. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
We're speaking this morning with Nicholas Caleb, author of a recent article in Blue Oregon about the recent Nike deal that the state legislature passed. Let me remind you that coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 is the Omo Variety Hour. Brian Jones talks about the assault on public schools, and with Jacob Devaney discusses the emerging international struggle around saving the planet. We hear about the top environmental stories of 2012, and the movie Moles offers a feminist analysis of Newton shooting and gun violence. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15 on Locust Focus, Barbara Bernstein talks with climate scientist Todd Sanford about the public health impacts of climate change-induced storms such as Sandy and how to build a more resilient community. At 11, we have a change in the schedule. The Health Watch program with pediatrician Lawrence Rosen has been canceled. Instead, we will hear Food Sleuth Radio, which features an interview with Andy Fisher, former director of the Community Food Security Coalition, about how corporate America benefits from the food stamp program and real advocacy that needs to be done to reduce poverty and the corresponding hunger. At 11:30 on Madness Radio, speed skate champion Megan Busan describe her ordeal with trauma and eating disorder and how her medication only made her worse. Thanks to all KBOO members for your generous support in 2012 and best wishes for 2013. We are More Talk Radio this morning. My name is Cecil Prescott. My co-host is Celeste. Our guest is Nicholas Caleb. And we have a couple of callers online. So let's go to the next caller, Ray. Thank you for holding.
Hi, good morning. I just had an interesting question, which is, you have Nike, who's sort of advertising itself as the job creator locally, and then you have them making deals and pushing on our politicians to give them breaks. And it seems like we're just kind of being advertised to death, and there's this thin veneer of the conservatives aren't really conservative, as Randy said, because a real conservative would never make a deal like that. And the Democrats aren't really Democratic, because neither would Democrats make a deal like that. Nobody's really what they are, kind of in the same sense that Stalin wasn't really a communist. How do we get them to be more honest, you know? How do we dig deeper? I don't have the time, personally. I don't know where to get the time. Well, that's basically my question.
All right, thank you for your question. That brings up a valid point about worrying about what kinds of threats that institutions and entities will leverage at us. If nobody's really who they say they are, we should really stick to our values. We got nothing to lose, because there is no guarantee that if we sign away all of our birthright to this corporation, that they're not going to still do what they said they're going to do. The only thing that we've got that holds any leverage over them, I think, is the fact, as you mentioned earlier, this is the state of origin for, I won't say origin, but we hold a corporation charter. And what other controls do we have?
We have a lot, actually. And it's one of the sort of, even though we're in a bad spot and the screws are getting turned all the time, Oregon has an interesting history of democracy, and like a lot of states in the progressive era, so-called progressive era, they were really upset with the way that the oligarchy had control of everything, and they enacted nice laws. So we have initiative and referendum process that we can always do. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, of course, ironically, the Democrats over the last 30 years or so have been really instrumental in restricting those rights a little bit more, but they still exist. There's also this concept called home rule, which is really broad, I think, and is a sort of special academic, practical, legal interest of mine. But home rule says that where the state hasn't made a official pronouncement on something, mm-hmm. that counties and cities can govern themselves, right? Mm. So if we could even elect candidates at the local level who were strongly in rural Oregon and cities, if they were strongly supportive of the positions that we wanted to be, and that we're strongly antagonistic to this type of corporate rule, then we could do some grassroots resistance. Mm-hmm. I also think that the caller brings up a really interesting point about time and mm-hmm. sort of reliance. I think, you know, just on a personal level, you always have to sort of, personally, I don't want to be, have somebody have that kind of control over my life. So trying to divest in your own life from the things that you don't need, like sort of bailing on consumer culture is one way to do it. Like thinking about your workplace. I try to, in the spring, I'm going to try to do some seminars on teaching people how to create and run nonprofits and cooperatives, right? And so even finding sort of like ways that you can sustain yourself on a local level, find work, are ways that even when you engage in that process, you start to begin to think like, well, how can I divest from that? And Portland is just like a magnificent place for that sort of DIY culture.
Yes, indeed. Let's go to our next caller. Karen, good morning.
Good morning. Great discussion as usual. I have just a couple comments. One is I think that what Nike's doing is really shameful because the message that they are sending is that they are not willing to contribute to the health and welfare of our community and our state. And they're not, you know, they're looking for ways to get out of that. And, of course, you know, that's what big corporations do. But I just really think that it's shameful. And the message is, you know, pretty insulting, actually, to the communities that house them and give them a home. So I wouldn't mind seeing them go. It's like good riddance, you know, definitely. But I agree that, you know, cooperative ownership, people would make completely different decisions. You know, Nike has, you know, Gulfstreams, top-of-the-line airlines that they fly people around in, and I don't think cooperative ownership would support that kind of stuff. And I watched a great movie. I really want to recommend this. It's on Netflix called I Am. And one of the people in there that the director interviews is the Dalai Lama. And he says, use critical thinking to analyze the problem and then figure out the one thing that you are passionate about and that you can do. Because I am the problem and I am the solution. Mm-hmm. So this year I want to figure out my one thing that I can do and really devote my heart and soul to that. And I think that if we all do that, we can be effective.
You know, one of the things I like about what you're saying is I think some of the power is also in the hands of us as consumers. You know,
yeah.
And if we organize some protests at their pocketbook level, they might think a little bit more of including us in whatever plans they've got.
Oh, but I don't buy Nike products. I do not buy any Nike products.
Okay. Thank you for your call. Nicholas,
well, thank
comments?
You.
Yeah, it's to me, there are a couple things that came to mind when she was speaking, and I agree. There's this idea, it's hard to get into the psychology of anybody like Phil Knight, for example. Like, I don't know Phil Knight. I don't know what he thinks. I don't even know if he sits around, you know, like the way that we stereotype, like a rich person that's looking to exploit everybody and like is, you know, twiddling his fingers. I don't think that's what's happening. He probably thinks that he's doing, you know, the right thing. He does a lot of philanthropic stuff, right? But it's sort of this Randian, like, notion of, like, I should be above it. Like, I should be making these decisions. Like, I'll do it when I want to. Like, no constraints on me, the egoistic individual. And it reminds me of the film Citizen Kane, which I rewatched recently. And there's this great scene where he's talking about, you know, all these great things he wants to do for people. And his friend tells him, you know, when people realize that they can get those things for themselves, they're not going to ask you for that. And I really like that sort of idea of these two different interplays. And we don't want philanthropy. We want government that works and takes care of people and that we can change our minds as a collective, right? We don't want to just have to beg some wealthy person to please, you know, fund our health care or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Speaking of government, I think we should acknowledge those in government who bucked the tide. So that this bill passed 55 in the House and 22-6 in the Senate. Those opposing it in the House were Representative Fredericks, Ken Geyer, Jefferson Smith, Thatcher, and Tomei. And those opposing it in the Senate was Brokis, George, Cruz, Olson, and Shields, and Whitsitt. Let's go to our next caller. Heidi, good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, hi, guys. Thanks for the good conversation. I just wanted to mention two things. First of all, this whole idea that Nike is a job creator, I don't think it's for the average person. because over the course of the last couple of years, I've lived in Oregon for about 10 plus years, the average person that I know that would like to work there, it's virtually impossible to get through their system. Mm-hmm. So I don't know who they're creating jobs for other than rich people and sports people. And so I'd like to challenge that notion. And the other thing is, a book I'd like to mention is Occupy the Economy by Richard Wolff. He's interviewed by David Bersamian from Alternative Radio, which is broadcast on KABU. It is a very small, concise, great volume. I'm about halfway through. But I think part of the problem is when we go to discuss these bigger economic issues, the average person really hasn't spent a lot of time trying to understand the way it's worked or how we got to where we were. I know because I've listened to your program a lot, you guys understand that a lot of these economic issues happened starting with the Reagan era and all of these things that took place. And so now all of this bad stuff is coming home to roost. And because people on the average don't understand the way the economy actually works, then we're at a loss to try and understand it and try and make sense of it, or even find a way that we can come up with alternative solutions and really challenge the corporate structure. And so I just want to encourage the listeners to try and educate themselves about first about the root causes and how these things come to be so that we can be in a really good conversation about it. And so that's just kind of what I wanted to offer up. And thank you again for having this conversation. I think it's really important. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for your call.
Nike, they had a lot of the rhetoric that they used in the emergency session was talking about their high-paying jobs, and they're like, on average, you know, about $100,000 a year for salary. Well, okay, there's a lot of ways that you creatively calculate that. One is that they subcontract out their sweatshop labor, so that doesn't count, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, that's not Nike, that's just our supplier, mm-hmm. right? They brand the Nike logo on everything, but that's not us. And the other thing are, you know, people that work down in Nike Town aren't making $100,000 a year.
No,
you average
not.
In these enormous corporate salaries and then make it seem like everybody's making this big wage. There's a huge disconnect between corporate office and workers, mm-hmm. Like there is in most industries in this country.
And we'll go to our next caller.
Good morning.
Ooh, now we just spoke to a Heidi.
Bill. Good morning, Bill.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I just want to say that I think we ought to be voting on issues. We ought to have a political party that says, if you elect us, we let you vote on the issues, and we need paper ballots. Call it the Democracy Party or American Party, I don't care, but we need to vote on issues, on all the issues. Take the politicians out of politics. The biggest issue is the process. If we get control of the process, we can address all the other major problems we're looking at. And I appreciate your taking my call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, I feel like everybody should be clamoring for campaign finance reform all the time. It's one of those, if we're serious about having a state government, we can't have a state government that, I mean, most people don't know this. There's a lobbyists actually have a room in the Capitol. It's called the Capitol Club, and you pay a fee in order to, like, be a part of this, like, elite group. So there's, like, lobbying is in our state government. It's not next door. There is a freaking room in the state government for lobbyists. And so restricting lobbyists and restricting campaign contributions, we almost did it a couple years ago. We almost capped them at 500, and then we passed the statute, and we didn't pass the constitutional amendment. So mm-hmm. it's allowed our officials to be like, oh, well, there are these weird legal reasons why we can't enforce campaign finance laws. But that should be, you know, for me, it's the number one thing. You can't even look beyond anything at issues until you say, who are our officials responsive to? And right now, if you're a band of even a couple thousand people saying, like, you know, with a really strong argument saying, we need to address this, and then somebody else has a big checkbook on the other side or a job waiting as soon as the legislator gets out of office, like, they're not going to, you know, people are drawn to power because they know how to stay in power. Mm-hmm. They have that instinct. And so we've got to change that calculation so that people realize that the way to stay in power or the way to get ahead is to be responsive. That's mm-hmm. the whole theory behind representative government. And it's not really working that way for us.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO FM. We've been speaking here with Nicholas Cage. Oh. Nicholas Cage. Nicholas Caleb, there we go. And we've been talking about the Nike deal, and it would really be a good idea, I think, for all of us to check out his article, which you can find at blueoregon.com. Kneel before the job creators or stand for something better, because as he mentioned at the top of the show, the article is really dense and it speaks to other things than just the Nike deal. The Nike deal is not only an economic challenge, but it's a challenge to democratic process. But he also mentions issues that could arise out of this, such as threats to job security, threats to union security and union jobs, public employees security. And so it's a very good article to read to get an idea of the depth of this deal and the different ways in which you might find personally to both protest and to galvanize your community. So do check it out. You can find it again at BlueOregon, one word, .com. And I don't know if I want to give the entire URL. That is a bit long. We can link to it at our site, yeah, and make it easier to find. But you can find it if you look for Nicholas, N-I-C-H-O-L-A-S, and last name is C-A-L-E-B.
You mentioned, you know, there are things that we can do. And normally the legislature, its formal session begins next month.
Mm-hmm.
Are there, and I know that there are a lot of organizations, a lot of groups who are, may not be able to go into the Capitol room or this special lobby group, but they have special lobby days in which they'll go down to advocate for particular issues. Are there things that you would, other things you would suggest that average citizens participate in or to think about as the formal legislative session begins?
Issues or ways to organize? I'll put out a personal request that we get as many people on Saturday at 5 at St. Francis over near here. We're going to have our second meeting with the Anti-Austerity Coalition sort of action group and decide whether or not we can throw together something for that opening legislative session week. And I think there's enough energy. So if we can get people to sort of bring their organizations in and sign up and tell their story of austerity and come up with what kind of demands that they want out of this legislative session, to organize that in a coherent fashion, I think would be excellent. If we could go down with 10 or 15 different like interest groups that are saying the same thing, like we're against austerity, we're against biasing our government toward the interests of the wealthy in a time of supposed financial problem or economic crisis, and we want these things, and this is our people's budget. This is what we want our democratic process to do, generate a lot of media coverage, get people to understand that there is this opposition. That would be a good first strike.
Is that, and you said that's 5 p.m.?
Saturday.
This Saturday at St. Francis in Southeast Portland?
Yep.
And do you have a Facebook page or contact?
Yeah, if you're on Facebook, we're Solidarity Against Austerity Coalition. Is the way to look us up, and all the information will be there. And our website is solidarityagainstausterity.org. And it's a lot of the people who organized the protest on November 3rd. We're trying to continue that effort forward, because this idea of corporate rule and austerity measures for the working class is something that's going to be with us for a really long time. And people need to sort of get their heads around that and find out, like you were saying earlier, how you're affected by it, because everybody really is. Start to tell your story, start to understand it within this narrative, and then start to work with others that are working on the issue and build this coalition as broad as possible.
I want to also let people know that there's a Legislative Advocacy 101 class that's sponsored by the city here, the Portland, to help you prepare for lobbying the 2013 State of Oregon Legislature. You can get more information here if you call the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, City of Portland. The event takes place from 6 to 8 p.m. tomorrow at the Portland Building, second floor. So you can get training to find out more of how to lobby your state legislature.
Thank you, Nicholas Caleb, for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, listeners, and thank you, members, for supporting your community connection, KBOO Portland.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, the Portland metro area's independent, no advertising, and community-powered radio station. It's time for the Old Mole Variety Hour, where each Monday morning, our collective of agitator moles provide interviews, reviews, and views that challenge the status quo and encourage greater understanding, reflection, and action. I'm your host, Laurie Mercier, and Carlos Chavez is engineering. On today's show, we discuss how powerful interests are threatening our water, our land, our schools, our jobs, and our lives, and how people are mobilizing to protect the planet and create a more just world. The nature and logic of capitalism are incorrigibly avaricious. Always seeking new ways to make money, capitalists have reinvented the system many times in the past 200 years. Each incarnation has featured new brands of exploitation and corruption, redesigned and packaged to distract and seize control. Working people have won hard-fought gains to rein in the worst excesses of capital, but however ingenious or effective the reforms, they've been limited, if not eventually subverted, by the intractably mercenary nature of capitalism. As we see from the history of the past 40 years, an era that has been marked by a transatlantic assault on social democracy, the rage to accumulate remains the predatory heart and soul of capitalism. We have good reason to assume that capitalists will always seek and find fresh ways